The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard on corners in town, like a cancer that's silently spreading. There's an unspoken fear we're on our way down. We must take America back, Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back. Lord knows they'll try to silence our voices. They'll pretend to be patriots fighting for fairness for all, but they're not even fit to hold office. What they believe doesn't fit with freedom at all. We must take America back, Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, and ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back. Fight for freedom, freedom and the soul of the USA. Right here, right now, it's Independence Day. Washington, D.C., before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, who lift us and heed us, who stand for what's right and stand up to what's wrong. We must take America back, now and forever, with God in his rightful place. Then he will bless and protect the U.S. We must take America back. We must take America back.
Good evening and welcome to the National Intel Report. I am your guest host today, Chris Hinckley. It's Friday, July 20th, 2018. Sitting in for John Stadmiller, I am the regular host of Road Warrior Radio here on Republic Broadcasting Network, and happy Friday to you, I suppose. I really like that intro song, and so thank you for indulging as we listen to the whole thing. And, you know, is it just rhetoric, or do we really relate to that? I think it's interesting. You know, you consider what I would consider the two main issues. You know, you listen to folks like John Adams. What were the two main issues that sparked something that resulted in what he referred to as a great and important alteration in the religious, moral, political, and social character of the people of 13 colonies, all distinct, unconnected, and independent of each other? What were the two main causes? According to him, in simple terms, it was the issue of taxation without representation. And there's much more to it. That's an oversimplification, but most notably the Tax Act, the Stamp Act, that used other mechanisms to enforce laws that had been on the books for 50, 75, 100 years, according to John Adams. And, you know, the way he put it, these acts of trade as revenue laws and writs of assistance as tyrannical instruments to carry them into execution. And so that was one issue. And the other, and they're both tied together, obviously, but the other was this issue of individual liberty and personal freedom. Do I have the right to be left alone? Do I have the right to be, you know, as the Fourth Amendment puts it, do I have the right to be secure in my persons, my person, house, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures? And, you know, this issue of reasonableness and construing of probable cause, you know, is just, I think, a sort of reinvention of writs of assistance as tyrannical instruments to carry all kinds of awful things, most notably revenue laws, into execution. So here we are again. Anyway, here's the point. You know, all of that, you know, taxation without representation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But here's the point. How many people, if we took a survey of, say, folks who vote, you know, we are led to believe that this is a representative government, a constitutional republic, and you know, part of the checks and balances is the legislative branch, and that people elect from among themselves representatives, men of their choice, as the founders would say, to represent their interests in matters of politics, you know, affairs of state. But the question is, if we took a survey of the people who vote, let's say, you know, the legitimate voting contingent in America, you know, the Democratic practice of registering voters in the graveyard, and Republican practice of suppressing votes through things like Chris Kobach's interstate cross-check system, or the Democratic and Republican practice of trying to recruit illegal immigrants and so forth, people who shouldn't be voting. All of those issues notwithstanding, the legitimate contingent of American voters, if we surveyed them, how many of those people do you suppose, what percentage would have met anyone that they might consider, or anyone would consider, their political representative? So it's interesting when you start thinking about it. I have no idea, but I would imagine it's a relatively small percentage outside of the, you know, the meet and greets, campaign trail kind of stuff, political pandering and things like that. You know, all of those things I don't think count. Setting those, you know, moments of political opportunism aside, how many folks have just hung out with their elected representatives? I dare say it's a marginal fraction of the voting populace that has met their elected representatives outside of, again, some politically opportunistic moment. And I guess that's, you know, a relative term. for a politician, you know, maybe sleep is even a politically opportune moment. I don't know. Anyway, I think it's interesting to think about, because when you start to put that in context, how can a person that has never met you or the broad contingent of their constituents possibly represent your interests, my interests, our interests? How is that even remotely possible? A person in a lot of cases who is detached from the constituency in a variety of ways. How could we argue that person represents their constituency at all, let alone well? You know, you think about how difficult it is for relationships, for those who have been married, you know what I'm talking about, or, you know, parents and children. To know somebody on a personal level is something that can take a lifetime. And yet somehow we are to imagine that a person whom you've never met, who has never met you, can somehow represent your interests, so to speak, as well or better than you yourself. It's absurd. And so that reminds me of two quotes. You know, how is that possible that someone who hasn't met you could possibly represent your interests? Reminds me of John Adams in a letter to his wife Abigail, May 17th, 1776, when he wrote, "There is something very unnatural and odious in a government 1,000 leagues off." There is something very unnatural and odious in a government 1,000 leagues off. I'm still hacked off about Independence Day and, you know, how ridiculous it is that, speaking of John Adams, when someone like John Adams says, you know, the second day of July, the 2nd of July, 1776, should be remembered as the great day of deliverance. You know, the second day of July, 1776, he wrote to Abigail, July 3rd, 1776. The 2nd of July was when Congress voted unanimously to declare independence. The 4th was when the specific language was ratified. The Continental Congress. So, on the 3rd of July, the day after the unanimous vote, John Adams wrote to Abigail, "The second day of July, 1776, will be the most memorable epoch in the history of America. I am apt to believe that it will be celebrated by succeeding generations as the great anniversary festival. It ought to be commemorated as the day of deliverance by solemn acts of devotion to God Almighty," period. Again, the intro song for the National Intel Report, I think, is apropos. "Continuing," he wrote, "it ought to be solemnized with pomp and parade, with shows, games, sports, guns." Wait a minute, will you? You know, that's dangerous. We can't, you know, maybe the, you know, those who we think are, you know, should have them. Anyway. "It should be solemnized with pomp and parade, with shows, games, sports, guns, bells, bonfires, and illuminations from one end of this continent to the other, from this time forward forevermore." Now, you know, guns, are you kidding me? You can't light fireworks if they're not, you know, only the prescribed people in the prescribed area with the prescribed licensing. Is basically what it's coming down to. Oh no, there's a noise ordinance. You can't do it, you know, later than. We are not left to our own devices, so to speak, to our own maturing conscience, our own maturation process. And this is playing into and perpetuating, I guess, a sort of infantilism, I think, in this society. People don't know how to behave because they spend their lives bumper bowling these days, bouncing back and forth between gutters, as it were, never really figuring out the lessons in life they should be learning. Again, you know, John Adams' words, it ought to be commemorated as the day of deliverance by solemn acts of devotion to God Almighty. It's interesting, in simple terms, just to sort of summarize this, I usually ask the question, who decides? Because, you know, you look at all of the planning. Anytime you hear, I hear planning, central planning, this planning, that planning, it makes my skin crawl when I hear those words. I think of Hayek's words in The Road to Serfdom, referring to the first of modern day planners, Henry de Saint-Simon, who said that those who would not obey the planning boards, he predicted those who would not obey the planning boards would be treated like cattle. That's what happens in planning. And so you skip forward in Hayek's Road to Serfdom, chapter 10, titled Why the Worst Get on Top, and he explains those with hubris, those psychopaths with, you know, devoid of conscience and with unlimited hubris, unfettered hubris, are the folks most likely to get into power because of all this planning. Someone says, you know, people get together and they can't behave themselves, so they, you know, a little vocal minority tries to perpetrate some injury basically on a broader majority. We have to do something about this. So some planning board is convened and they come up with some kind of plan to do something and some, you know, rules for the community, some CCNRs or some ordinances or something of that nature. And along the way, maybe their plans go too far and people say, you know, whether it's that the board, the planning board, for example, or the community or whatever, somebody says that's too far. Then someone comes along with a little more hubris and says, I'll do it. And then the planning goes a little bit further. The execution starts where the planning, last planning left off, but the execution wouldn't push through because no one had that much hubris. And then the next person shows up and see, that's how it works. The planning presses the envelope. The execution falls just short of the outer edge, the outer limit. And then the next person shows up. I'm reminded of the email that I got recently on the story activist post. Couple of weeks ago now, is it? No. Is that this week? The headline over an activist post, story published July 17th, 3 days ago. Kavanaugh, warrantless data collection is entirely consistent with the Fourth Amendment, quote unquote. So, from Philip Snyder, on July 9th, President Trump announced Brett Kavanaugh as his nominee for the Supreme Court to replace retiring Justice Anthony Kennedy, and who's already begun facing intense scrutiny over issues such as Roe v. Wade, the Second Amendment, and net neutrality. However, Kavanaugh's stance on the Fourth Amendment runs in opposition to what most Americans believe, that the government should not be collecting the personal information of American citizens without a warrant. Although a Pew Research poll from 2014 found that roughly 54% of the public disapprove of warrantless surveillance, Brett Kavanaugh believes that the program is, quote, entirely consistent with the Fourth Amendment. And in a 2015 statement, quote, concurring in the denial to rehearing en banc in Clayman v. Obama, Kavanaugh concluded that the collection of metadata from telecommunication service providers is, quote, not considered a search under the Fourth Amendment. Isn't that fun? So if you're using technology, well, you know, it's not really a collection. That's what the NSA says. That's funny, Brett Kavanaugh. That's the NSA's definition. It's not really collecting it because it's in a bucket. It's only collecting it when we pull it out and look at it.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Dangerous enemy that has ever faced mankind in his long climb from the swamp to the stars. And it's been said if we lose that war, and in so doing lose this way of freedom of ours, History will record with the greatest astonishment that those who had the most to lose did the least to prevent its happening. Well, I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the founding fathers. Not too long ago, two friends of mine were talking to a Cuban refugee, a businessman who had escaped from Castro. And in the midst of his story, one of my friends turned to the other and said, "We don't know how lucky we are." And the Cuban stopped and said, "How lucky you are. I had some place to escape to." And in that sentence, he told us the entire story. If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth. And this idea that government is beholden to the people, that it has no other source of power except the sovereign people, is still the newest and the most unique idea in all the long history of man's relation to man. This is the issue of this election. Whether we believe in our capacity for self-government or whether we abandon the American Revolution and confess that a little intellectual elite in a far distant capital can plan our lives for us better than we can plan them ourselves.
You and I are, and that's still the issue and always has been the issue, I believe. You know, I might turn into a one-trick pony or maybe a 5 or 6 one-trick pony. It basically comes down to this, you know. If you read the Bible, we're supposed to occupy until he comes, and we self-govern until he shows up. We don't ask for a king. We wait for the king, and behave ourselves, learn how to get along. And, you know, there are always the Judaizers sneaking around, creeping around, being secretly brought in, like in Galatians chapter 2. But, you know, that clip, even though it was written by a speechwriter, you know, from Reagan, sounds to me, it echoes John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, probably Jefferson, Madison, Washington, you know, certainly James Otis and his rousing speech, Samuel Adams, and those kinds of voices. So can we be left alone? Can we not be taxed? If I don't approve of it, how is it that if you don't fall in line, in lockstep with this society, then suddenly you are persona non grata? That used to be the kind of sentiment that was celebrated in this society. Anyway, on that note, let's go to the phones and grab W in Texas. I hope it's not the W.
No, it's not the W.
Right on.
I thought I was calling.
Welcome. Thanks for calling.
Mike. I thought this was the Rivero show, but it's good enough. I'm sure you're talking about all the events that's happening this week with this situation, I guess.
With the what? Hello? I didn't catch that.
I said I'm assuming that you're talking about some of the events that's happening this week.
Not yet, but yeah, we'll get into it here in a little bit. Go ahead, though.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just going to say, I think it's interesting that these allegations create like this feedback loop, even though, you know, they still haven't shown a server, which is, it seemed to be the most basic thing you would do. You would get the hardware if it's such a major breach like this, but apparently still didn't get the hardware. So we started this. It's like a fairy tale, and the public that's sort of on the fence, we have to kind of deal with this sort of feedback loop. Because what I mean by that is like the comedians, the actors, the people on the news that are just really in a hate monger kind of phase. They just feed back on this, on a falsity. And you just keep hearing it over and over again. So what happens is, now we're basing policy off of a lie. That's the scary part to me, so that's all I wanted to say.
Good point, and yeah, let's stick around for a second, and we'll talk more about this when we come back. Stick around, folks, we'll be right back after this short break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Mm-hmm. so, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
If you are one of the millions of people who get migraines, you need to know about MigRelief. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist who created MigRelief, the patented dietary supplement that addresses nutritional deficiencies in adults and children with migraines. Thousands of physicians and pharmacists recommend MigRelief.
Call 800-MIG-7354 or visit MIG911.com.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you a few from Amazon.com. By Mel. Great product. My husband and father-in-law use it regularly. Both my husband and father-in-law have had significant change in their blood pressure and overall health. By Amazon customer. It works for me. Returned to buy the tincture and the capsules as they were on sale during February. Unlike some other products, this one worked for blood pressure and occasional irregular heartbeat. Extendivite produced noticeable results after just two bottles, a four-month supply. I take Extendivite three times a day, every day. I think this supplement has helped with my increased fitness regime and to lower my blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite. Bust it,
kick down, break down, take down. Everybody wants into the crowded line. Break down, take down, you bust it. Bust it, shake down, break down, take down. Just about the time you think that it's all right.
We need a shakedown and a takedown. Welcome back. Welcome back to the National Intel Report. Bottom of the first hour, I'm your guest host, Chris Hinckley. We're on the phones. We have W in Texas on the line. Good points. You know, as far as the server nonsense goes, you're absolutely right. It's funny. The hardware has never been properly investigated. The allegations have never been properly vetted. And the feedback loop that you mentioned, I think of basically – you know, between your remarks about it creating a feedback loop and it being a fairy tale, basically it's being advanced, which I think is a perfect word for what's happening. I think of the CIA's limited hangout sort of concept, because it is a fairy tale that creates this echo chamber of nonsense that in turn, like you said, or like you pointed out, sort of always seems to lead into policy making based on fallacious accounts of things, you know, like based on a fairy tale, like you said. I think that's a great way to put it. And it's interesting, just as an aside, to sort of substantiate what you're saying, in Ralph Epperson's book, The Unseen Hand, An Introduction to the Conspiratorial View of History. And for those who don't know who Ralph Epperson is, you can have a little bit of fun by going to his website, ralpheperson.com, and you can see right at the top of his website on the homepage, the Hilo Tribune Herald front page from Hilo, Hawaii, Sunday, November 30th, 1941. That was the weekend before Pearl Harbor, right? December 7, 1941. So what happened? Well, there was a headline. The Hilo Tribune Herald ran a headline, Japan may strike over weekend. That was the weekend before Pearl Harbor. I wonder how they knew. So that's who Ralph Epperson is. Anyway, in his book, The Unseen Hand, in Chapter 3, Forms of Government, he wrote these words. Here is outlined the procedure by which democratic or even republican forms of government can be turned into a dictatorship. This technique is of subverting a democracy into a dictatorship was spelled out in a book in 1957 by Jan Kozak, a member of the Secretariat of the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia. Mr. Kozak titled his book, How Parliament Took a Revolutionary Part in the Transition to Socialism and the Role of the Popular Masses. That's an important title to muse, I would say. The American version of this book is titled, And Not a Shot is Fired, The Communist Strategy for Subverting a Representative Government. Mr. Kozak describes what has been called the pincers movement, which sounds a lot like what you just described. And here it is. The method by which the conspirators can use the parliament, the pressure from above, quote-unquote, and the mob, the pressure from below, quote-unquote, to convert a democracy into a dictatorship. Mr. Kozak explained his strategy. A preliminary condition for carrying out fundamental social changes and for making it possible that parliament be made use of for the purpose of transforming a capitalistic society into a socialistic one is A, to fight for a firm parliamentary majority which would ensure and develop a strong pressure from above, quote unquote, and B, to see to it that this firm parliamentary majority should rely on the revolutionary activity of the broad working masses exerting pressure from below, quote unquote. But what is that in layman's terms? Well, here it is. Ralph writes, what Mr. Kozak proposed was a five-part program to seize control of a government. The first step consisted of having the conspiracy's own people infiltrate the government, the pressure from above. Second step was to create a real or alleged grievance, like what we're talking about now, the fairy tale, usually through either an action of government or through some situation where the government should have acted and didn't. Sounds familiar. The third step consisted in having a mob created by the real or alleged grievance, the fairy tale in this case, as you pointed out, that the government or the conspiracy caused, demand that the problem be solved by a governmental action, the pressure from below, quote unquote, that mob. And then the fourth step consisted in having the conspirators in the government remedy the real or alleged situation, the fairy tale in this case, with some oppressive legislation. The fifth step is a repeat of the last three. The legislation that the government passes does not solve the problem, and the mob demands more and more legislation until the government becomes totalitarian in nature by possessing all the power. So, I mean, that kind of describes what you said, right?
That's a perfect breakdown right there.
Yeah.
And I just want to leave with this. I think it's also good, too. I've been listening to a lot of different pundits, like Jimmy Dore. He's a true liberal, but he's not buying this either. You got H.A.
Yeah.
Goodman. He's a liberal turned independent.
Yeah.
So I think if there's any silver lining is the fact that there are different people from different ideologies, different ways of thinking that are not buying it. So it's not a left-right thing. This is just thinking people, not being swayed by, you know, by the fairy tale. That's the best way I can say it. So I agree with that.
Right on. Thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Great points, and I agree. You know, I appreciate Jimmy Dore. We play some of Jimmy's clips. We played some of H.A. Goodman's stuff on Road Warrior Radio. I think H.A. has a good way of just kind of, you know, and Jimmy Dore, too. I wish we could play more of his stuff, but, you know, the profanity obviously prevents it. Anyway, yeah, there's some reality check stuff. You know, the whole progressive kick that Jimmy Dore is on is kind of, it's unfortunate. And the, you know, the Young Turks connection sort of, whatever. But the point is, you know, people thinking critically and trying to reason through things, I think is a great thing. And we all need to be doing more of that. I think we need to be forming our own ideas and opinions in anti-Bernaysian fashion, if you will. And I want to come back to that. We'll go back to the phones in a second. I want to come back to John Adams' words specifically on these two things. Because if we could – I'm telling you, John Adams told us, you know, the two things that I will say – and we'll go back to the phones right after this – and I want to come back to this. Two things I would say. I would highly encourage folks to investigate who James Otis was. That's what John Adams said. He said we should remember. The way John Adams put it in a letter to William Tudor on June 1, 1818, who was James Otis? First of all, what was the significance of James Otis? What was James Otis's significance, particularly in John Adams' life? You know, John Adams, first vice president, second president under the Constitution. You know, I mean, if you go to the not that this necessarily means anything, but you go to the Wikipedia page for the founding fathers of the United States, he's listed as number one. Historian Richard B. Morris in 1973 identified the following seven figures as the key founding fathers. John Adams, number one. Benjamin Franklin, two. Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, George Washington. So John Adams is listed first. But we don't talk about John Adams, and we don't seem to talk about what he sent us a letter ahead from the past, a reminder, a series of reminders, I would say. Keep us zeroed in on, you know, what we shouldn't lose sight of. Again, looking back at Ronald Reagan's words, you know, that concept, like he said, you know, how did he say that? If we lose this way of freedom of ours, history will record with the greatest astonishment that those who had the most to lose did the least to prevent its happening. People have forgotten the most to lose. We don't know. We've slipped into a servile sort of malaise. You know, a servile sort of trance-like apathy in this society. That's not who we are. That's not, you know, you look back at those pictures 150 years ago or so, and those people, you know, to the most common folk, you wouldn't want to trifle with. They'll fight you to the death for what is theirs. And that gets right to the sentiment that John Adams was writing about James Otis. So, who was James Otis? What was his significance? Well, listen to what John Adams wrote about James Otis. No man could have written from memory Mr. Otis's argument. James Otis presented a defense of Boston merchants in 1761 against these writs of assistance as just sort of blanket search warrants. You know, anybody who had one of these magical pieces of paper could just break into anything and steal just about anything whenever and wherever they wanted. Sounds a lot like what's happening today in America. So James Otis presented a defense. It was unsuccessful, but obviously his 4 or 5 hours worth of oratory stuck in the minds of people, John Adams in particular. And this is what he wrote about that. No man could have written from memory Mr. Otis's argument of 4 or 5 hours. 4 or 5 hours. Can you imagine? A legal defense that was lucid and cogent over 4 or 5 hours that held the attention of people like John, a young John Adams, so much so that he remembers it 60 years later like he's still there. Think about that. That's incredible. No man could have written from memory Mr. Otis's argument of 4 or 5 hours against the acts of trade as revenue laws and against writs of assistance as a tyrannical engine to execute them. The next day after it was spoken, no one could have written it from memory the next day after it was spoken. So how awkward then, he wrote, would be an attempt to do it after a lapse of 57 years, exclamation point. And they weren't given to using that kind of punctuation. So nevertheless, some of the heads of his discourse are so indelibly imprinted on my mind. Can you imagine 57 years later? The heads, like the heads of his discourses, the way he puts it, are so indelibly imprinted on my mind that I will endeavor to give you some very short hints of them. Incredible. Almost 60 years later. So he lists a few. He lists five. I'll skip to number two. A dissertation on the rights of man in a state of nature, he asserted, James Otis, asserted that every man, merely natural, was an independent sovereign subject to no law, but the law written on his heart and revealed to him by his maker, capital M, in the constitution of his nature and the inspiration of his understanding of his conscience. His right to his life, his liberty, no created being could rightfully contest. Nor was his right to his property less incontestable. This is the kind of, to me, when I look at the pictures 150 years ago, that's the kind of spirit that I see in their eyes. So his right to his life, his liberty, no created being could rightfully contest, nor was his right to his property less incontestable. The club that he had snapped from a tree for a staff or for defense was his own. His bow and arrow were his own. If by a pebble he had killed a partridge or a squirrel, it was his own. No creature, man or beast, had a right to take it from him. Again, this is the spirit that I see in their eyes in the pictures 150 years ago. If he had taken an eel or a smelt or a sculpin, it was his property. In short, he sported upon this topic with so much wit and humor, and at the same time, so much indisputable truth and reason, that he was not less entertaining than instructive. He asserted that these rights were inherent and inalienable, that they never could be surrendered or alienated but by idiots or madmen. Are we idiots and madmen today in America, according to by John Adams' standard here? They never could be surrendered or alienated but by idiots or madmen. And all the acts of idiots or lunatics were void and not obligatory by all the laws of God and man. Nor were the poor Negroes forgotten. Not a Quaker in Philadelphia or Mr. Jefferson of Virginia ever asserted the rights of Negroes in stronger terms. And do we hear that today, by the way, in America? Don't we hear a completely counter narrative? Folks need to read Frederick Douglass. That's all I got to say. What did he say about Thomas Jefferson? Anyway, young as I was, John Adams writes, and ignorant as I was, I shuddered at the doctrine he taught. And I have all my life shuddered and still shudder at the consequences that may be drawn from such premises. Shall we say that the rights of masters and servants clash and can be decided only by force? I adore the idea of gradual abolitions, but who shall decide how fast or how slowly these abolitions shall be made? Exactly. That's always my question. Who decides? So that's number two in his 5 points, the heads of James Otis' discourse. Number three, I guess we're continuing. I think we're coming up on a break here in a second. Well, number three, maybe we'll have to continue this, but we'll start anyway. Number three, well, yeah, we'll pick that up on the other side of this break. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Where you will learn that packaging is all that heaven is.
Got the little black car, the little black dress. We got the guru and the trailer and the full-course dress. We got the software, hard drive, CD-ROM. We got the exploitation.com. We got the pages.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Extendivite, a seven-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Won't be out in the morning dew, morning. Please walk me out in the morning dew sometime. Can't walk you out in no morning dew. I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Can't walk you out in no morning dew. but I heard a young man cry. Thought I heard a young man cry. You didn't hear no young man cry.
Welcome back. Final segment of the first hour of today's National Intel Report. Before I get into the rest of John Adams' letter, and I think it's important to remember, I'm not being, you know, sensational when I say everyone, you know, to the point of W's sentiments when he called. I agree, and to that end, I think we all should be reading what John Adams wrote, and I'll get into that more in the second hour here in a minute. But first, just a couple of things, you know, to sort of carry on where we were from that conversation. Ralph Epperson, in his book, The Unseen Hand, referred to this strategy that was outlined by Jan Kozak in 1957. In his book, the American title was "And Not a Shot Is Fired, the Communist Strategy for Subverting a Representative Government." That was a strategy that Ralph Epperson referred to later in his book. It's that important. And it's happening exactly, you know, that is exactly what W described. So from Hayek's Road to Serfdom, it's interesting. Speaking of this mob, we always, you know, you listen to Bernays, you read Propaganda, you read The Engineering of Consent, published in 1928 and 1947, respectively. And how he says, you know, we need to cater to the lowest common denominator, and it's the, you know, the rumor. It's rumored that Bernays was the idol of the Nazi propagandist Joseph Goebbels. So that's interesting. They did meet on at least one occasion. So have dinner. Anyway, in Hayek's Road to Serfdom, he talks about why if we all cultivate our own thoughts and opinions and tastes and things, why that's not conducive to, you know, a mobocracy. So we'll kind of pick up there in the second hour and continue on. Stick around. We'll be right back. Second hour coming up after the short break.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network.
because you can handle the truth.